जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी शोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके Bhakti-bhavati naishtaki. Hare Krishna. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 20, and we'll read about half the purport. This is quite lengthy. Shriyapatir Yagyapatir Prajapatir Shriyapatir Yagyapati Prajapatir Diyampatir Lokapatir Dharapati Diyampatir Lokapatir Dharapati Patir Gatis Chandaka Vrishni Satvatam Patirgatish Chandaka Vrishni Satvatam Rashitatam me Bhagavan Satam Pati Prasitatame Bhagavan Satampati. Shriyapatir Yajyapati Prajapatir. Diyampatir Lokapatir Dharapati. Patir Gatis Chandaka Vishni Satvatam. Prasidatam me Bhagavan Satam Patihi. Please chant. Shriyapati Yajyapati Prajapati Prasidatam me Bhagavan Satam Pati. Patir Yajna Pati Prajapati. Diyam Patir Loka Pati Dharapati. Prasidatam me Bhagavan Satam Pati. Shriya, all opulence. Pati, the owner. Yajna, of sacrifice. Pati, the director. Prajapati, the leader of all living entities. Diyam, of intelligence. Pati, the master. Lokapati, the proprietor of all planets. Dara, earth. Pati, the supreme. Pati, head. Gati, destination. Cha, also. Andaka, one of the kings of the Yadu dynasty. Vishni, the first king of the Yadu dynasty. Satvatam, the Yadus. Prasidatam, be merciful. Me, upon me. Bhagavan, Lord Sri Krishna. Satam, of all devotees. Pati, the Lord. Translation: May Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings like Andaka and Vishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, the spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on the earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful unto me. Purport. Since Sukadev Goswami is one of the prominent Gata Vyaligas, those who are freed from all misconceptions, he therefore expresses his own realized perception of Lord Sri Krishna as being the sum total of all perfection, the personality of Godhead. Everyone is seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune, but people do not know that Lord Sri Krishna is the beloved husband of all goddesses of fortune. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord, in his transcendental abode, Goloka Vrindavan, is accustomed to herding the Surabhi cows and is served there by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune. All these goddesses of fortune are manifestations of his transcendental pleasure potency, Ladini Shakti, and his internal energy. And when the Lord manifests himself on this earth, he partially displayed the activities of his pleasure potency in his Rasa Lila just to attract the conditioned souls who are all after the phantasmagoria pleasure potency and degraded sex enjoyment. The pure devotees of the Lord, like Shukadev Goswami, who was completely detached from the abominable sex life of the material world, discussed this act of the Lord's pleasure potency, certainly not in relation to sex, but to relish a transcendental taste inconceivable to the mundaners who are after sex life. Sex life in the mundane world is the root cause of being conditioned by the shackles of illusion. And certainly, Shukadeva Goswami was never interested in the sex life of the mundane world, nor does the manifestation of the Lord's pleasure potency have any connection with such degraded things. Lord Chaitanya was a strict sannyasi, so much so that he did not allow any woman to come near him, not even to bow down and offer respects. He never even heard the prayers of the Devadasis offered in the temple of Jagannath, because a sannyasi is forbidden to hear songs sung by the fair sex. Yet even in the rigid position of a sannyasi, he recommended the mode of worship preferred by the gopis of Vrindavan as the topmost loving service possible, to be rendered to the Lord. And Srimati Radharani is the principal head of all such goddesses of fortune, and therefore she is the pleasure counterpart of the Lord and is non-different from Krishna. In the Vedic rituals, there are recommendations for performing different types of sacrifice in order to achieve the greatest benefit in life. The benedictions that result from performing great sacrifices are, after all, favors given by the goddess of fortune, and the Lord, being the husband or lover of the goddess of fortune, is factually the Lord of all sacrifices also. He is the final enjoyer of all kinds of yajna. Therefore, Yajnapati is another name of Lord Vishnu. It is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita that everything be done for Yajnapati, Yajnartat Karmana, because otherwise one's acts will be the cause of conditioning by laws of material nature. Those who are not freed from all misconceptions, Vyalikam, perform sacrifices to please the minor demigods, but the devotees of the Lord know very well that Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all performances of sacrifice. Therefore, they perform the Sankirtan Yajna, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, which is especially recommended in this age of Kali. In Kali Yuga, performance of other types of sacrifice is not feasible due to insufficient arrangements and inexpert priesthood. We have information from the Bhagavad Gita 3:10-11 that Lord Brahma, after giving rebirth to the conditioned souls within the universe, instructed them to perform sacrifices and to lead a prosperous life. With such sacrificial performances, the conditioned souls will never be in difficulty in keeping body and soul together. Ultimately, they can purify their existence. They will find natural promotion into spiritual existence, the real identity of the living being. Under no circumstances should a conditioned soul ever give up the practice of sacrifice, charity, and austerity. The aim of all such sacrifices is to please the Yajnapati, the personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord is also Prajapati. According to the Katha Upanishad, the one Lord is the leader and maintainer of the innumerable living beings, Eko Bahunam Yo Vidadati Kaman. The Lord is therefore called the Supreme Bhuta Brit, or maintainer of all living beings. And we'll pause there for the purport. Om Gyan Timurandasya Vyanjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Maritam Jena Tasya Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinami Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaudavani Pachayane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pasticha Deshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Pancha Kalpa Dhrubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhaya Vishya Bhaktitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama. I'd like to begin by requesting the blessings of all Vaishnavas present here, listening online. This particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam, when I first saw that what section we're speaking on and that we're on chapter 4, I got a little scared because I remember when I started second canto of Bhagavatam, when I got to chapter 4 and the continuing chapters of the conversation of Narada, Brahma, and the specifications and the detailed, I got a little scared, and I remember it being a really tough sort of dry run for me, trying to get through this section. I had this mentality, I'm just going to get through it, just going to get through it. I may not understand it, it seems redundant, I just want to get to the end of the second canto so I can start. It was this get through kind of mentality. And I had an interesting experience with it, with the second canto. It's actually how I received this particular copy of Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, which is really a beautiful copy. It has a photo of Radha Landanishwar on the front. I went to England last winter for Christmas break, and I remember the day I flew in, there was Gita Jayanti, and there was a program in Soho Street with my spiritual master, and I thought, oh, well, have to make this, and I just flew in, but I'll take a train, I'll do whatever I can to get there on time. So I was rushing, and it was cold, and I was just dressed in a pants and a coat, and since it was the book marathon, there's literally one devotee at every street corner in Oxford Street, and you can't avoid them as hard as you try. So just outside of the little corner street to Soho Street Temple, there was a lady, and she stopped me to distribute a Bhagavad Gita. And I was frantic. I was like, look, lady, I'm trying to make the program. Like, I'm okay, I have it, you know, neckbeads, see? And then she's like, oh, okay. How about Srimad Bhagavatam? This is a special edition, Canto 2. Look, it has Radha Landanishwar's picture on the front. And I said, no. I knew in my heart, that's the book that I can't get through. But I was like, no, I have it already. You know, I read it already, even though I probably hadn't read it by then. And then she's like, okay, it's Gita Jayanti, sponsored by Vigita. So I paid £5 for one, and she said, make it 10 for two. So anyways, and then I rushed into the temple, and I forgot about the experience. And 10 days later, I went to see my spiritual master in the home he was staying before he went back to Germany. And we were talking a little bit, and he said, oh, I have a gift for you. And he pulls out this book. And I go, oh my God, you gotta be kidding me. The same book, but this is a special edition of Canto 2, and it has Radha Landanishwar's photo on the front. I thought, I can't run away from this. And I told him, oh, it's actually interesting. And, you know, I'm kind of trying to get through that canto right now, and I can't seem to do it. And he gave a few tips on, oh, maybe try to read with some sort of guidebook, which is sort of what I did to read this chapter. And so I want to share that, I found it really difficult in the beginning, this specific. And then that can happen in a lot of specific sections of Bhagavatam. You might feel like a whole chapter might just be genealogy. Okay, when's the next thing coming? When's the Leela coming? But I thought, if I look at it now with a different angle, a different vision, you know, kind of like you look through a crystal reflects light differently the way you turn it. And if you open your mind a little bit, I felt like I learned so much in this, just this one verse and just this chapter, which previously was just like, I closed my mind off and thought, I'm just going to move on to the next thing. That happens so much in spiritual practices. I mean, they're so simple a lot of the time, and you may hear the same content over and over again, that if we think, okay, what's coming next? Let me finish this to get to the next thing. We missed the whole point. And so a couple of weeks ago, I was at a retreat, a youth retreat, called the Sangha Initiative, and it was really, really nice. And in there, we had a lot of different breakout sanghas, boys, girls sanghas, smaller sanghas, all kinds of things. And there's a devotee, Bhuta Bhavana Prabhu from England, who was there. And I think a topic of studying Bhagavatam came up. And he had said that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj told him of a really nice, something that stuck with him for many years in reading Bhagavatam. And he said, to get more out of Prabhupada's book, this is coming from Bhakti Tirtha Swami, to get more out of Srila Prabhupada's books, read it thinking, how can I, number one, apply this to my own life, and number two, how can I teach it to others? And I thought that was so beautiful. How can I apply it to my own life? And how can I teach it to others? Because then when you read, it becomes personal to you. It's meaningful to you. And then you're thinking of other people. You're thinking in the mood of service. Okay, if I were to tell somebody else, how would I explain it? And then it really assimilates in the heart. So I try to think a little bit in this way, and I want to share my thoughts on the chapter as a whole, and specifically this verse also, and kind of give a little bit of a detailed context that helped me appreciate the verse so much more once I realized sort of the magnitude of what's going on in this chapter and the importance of Shukadeva Goswami just opening his heart up and sharing so many verses before answering the questions of Maharaj Parikshit. So in the end of Canto 1, Maharaj Parikshit asks the famous question, what is the duty of a dying man? The ultimatum question. And he hasn't spoken the last three chapters. It's been Shukadeva Goswami explaining very detailed the process of sadhana, really, and different processes of approaching the Supreme Lord. And ending in Bhakti Yoga and concluding in Bhakti Yoga. And so what we see in the very beginning of this verse is how Maharaj Parikshit has responded to receiving an answer to a burning question. So why is this reaction so important? You know, you just ask, maybe you've experienced this, if you ever have very important questions that you need answering to in life, and you feel like you're, and this Maharaj Parikshit is a really burning question, it's something so serious, he knows about it happening in life, and he's thinking about it so much, and he asks this question, and he gets a response that really strikes a chord in him. It's a very detailed, in-depth response from someone that means so much to him, that he looks so up to so much in Shukadeva Goswami. If you have a response like that to a question, usually it has an immediate effect on you. So in the beginning we see, what is the effect of such a question? Maharaj Parikshit was focused on Krishna more, this is in the first verse. He was focused on the Lord. And a few verses later on, it dispelled his ignorance, so he gained clarity. He became more detached, so mundane things didn't matter as much. Once you receive greater questions, or answers to the greater questions in life, the more mundane questions start to have less relevance. And then it says he became more renounced, and so thus more fixed on his natural love for Krishna. And so from this space, he asks very important questions. Once he receives the answer to the first burning question, there was so much follow-up. So he asks about creation and secondary creation. And at first, I don't look at it, oh, this is just another question. But I thought about it more, and I said, okay, what's really unique about this? He asked these questions that were, they posed the answers for the next two or three cantos to so much detail and so many stories that come. And what's very interesting is how Shukadeva Goswami then receives these questions. And the verse we have today is part of how he's receiving and responding to this question, but he hasn't yet answered it. So the whole chapter is his answering of the question without answering it. He's preparing his answer by offering prayers. Someone were to ask me, what is the Vedic version of creation? You know, what is the Vedic version of primary, secondary creation? Okay, well, you know, there's Vishnu and the lotus king. I'll just go on and on. I'll tell the whole story. But would I pause the way like Shukadeva Goswami paused? The most qualified to give his answer, but he doesn't depend on his own strength and his own intelligence and his own merit. He first offers obeisances. And this is a very important lesson. We first offer obeisances to the Lord before speaking about the Lord. You first offer your respects. And then after that, this verse and the one before and the next few verses, he asks for the Lord's mercy. He is more than qualified to answer these questions of Parikshit Maharaj. He is the most qualified to answer them. Yet he depends on the mercy of the Lord in order to do so. So observing Shukadeva Goswami, I think if we understand him in context of this verse a little more, then we'll be able to understand the importance of it and how if we pray in the same way that Shukadeva Goswami prays in this verse, we can also imbibe some of the qualities that he has and come to the same level of understanding eventually by understanding how he does it, not just what he's saying in this verse, but how is he approaching the Lord, how is he praying to him, how is he glorifying him. Shukadeva Goswami is extremely humble and his showing that he doesn't need to answer this immediately, but what he needs to do what's necessary is to depend on Krishna. So humility really means when you see yourself as deeply, deeply useless or incapable, without the mercy of the Lord. And that's the key, without the mercy. Without dependence on the Lord, there's no such thing as empowerment for oneself. Shukadeva Goswami is the most empowered speaker on Srimad Bhagavatam. But without his dependence on Krishna, he understands if I don't depend on Krishna, my ability to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam and to transform the heart of all the sages present, and especially Pariksha Maharaj, is null, it won't happen. So that's his humility first and foremost. And so, there's a very style in which he offers his respects to Krishna in his prayers. For example, in the few verses before where he's offering his obeisances to the Lord, it's something like, first I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Lord, blank. Supreme Lord, in very specific ways, he describes him, who is the essence of the Vedas, the essence of so many things, and at once all sinful effects are cleansed. And there's so many verses we've talked about in the last couple of weeks that hit on this point. And so I was thinking about this in terms of myself, and I apply it to myself. How many times do I offer obeisances thinking this way? Oh my Lord, I offer my respects to you because you are, and then I can glorify him in so many ways. I can think of the Lord's glorification in my own, or the Lord's glories in my own obeisances. And I was remembering that it's like we had this term growing up when you offer obeisances, hit the deck, because it's just like, down and up in half a second. And that's our approach, that's our mentality when we offer obeisances. Oh, I remember the Krishna house in the ashram, and the temple room is just kind of right there, so you go in and out sometimes for a lot of things. And we kind of develop this half bend down, touch the floor, touch your head, kind of half obeisances, barely even cutting it, but just in motion to show a little bit of respect. But the real obeisances is this mood that Shukadeva Goswami has here. I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Lord who is, and there's glorification, there's personalism involved in that obeisances. He addresses Krishna naturally in a very specific way. Krishna, who is this? Krishna, who is that? So the same thing is done here with this verse and this prayer. It kind of follows this certain theme or structure. May the Supreme Lord, who, blank, be pleased with me. For several verses, may the Supreme Lord, who glorifies them so much, be pleased with me. He addresses very specific, wonderful qualities in Krishna and asks for his mercy after this extensive glorification. And that is the whole point, that Krishna is a person. Krishna is a person who we can reciprocate and have a loving relationship with. Therefore, we need to show him, we understand him as a person. We have to show him that we understand who he is. We know what his glories are in very specific ways. It's not lip service. If you write a letter to somebody and you're so nice, you're so wonderful. Sometimes it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. It kind of goes over my head, but you're so nice and so kind. I remember this specific event we had together and you did this and it was so heart-touching. That letter means so much more. It shows that you actually appreciate the person. You remember what they've done in specific ways. It makes asking for mercy not just ordering for mercy. It's a difference. Begging for mercy and making Krishna our order supplier, ordering for mercy. One, there's no personalism involved. It's more me, me, me. It's more what's in it for me. The other is, I see you as so great. I recognize you. I appreciate that so much. And therefore, based on that greatness, I ask for a little bit of mercy from there. It's understanding specifically how is God great. When praying in this way that Shukadeva Goswami prays, and may the Supreme Lord, who is, and specifically, how is he great? Showing Krishna, you know how great he is. You know what great aspects there are of them and how important those are to you. And I felt that if I were to ask for blessings from Mother Agatmika, for example, and I said, oh, Mother Agatmika, you're such a wonderful devotee. Please give me your blessings. And she's so nice that immediately her face is changing. She'll give me her blessings. But if I were to be even more genuine, so Mother Agatmika, you're so wonderful. You're always giving so much encouragement. You text me after my classes and give me encouragement. And you talk with me at the temple. All these things. She'll feel her heart will well up with love. And she'll feel so much happiness and reciprocation in that relationship, thank you, that those blessings will go a long way. They'll be really meaningful. They'll be very genuine and really from the heart. And Krishna is the same way, and it shows here in these prayers of Shukadeva Goswami that really he's so close with Krishna, and he understands Krishna so much. He has so much knowledge of Krishna, realized knowledge, that when he shares this back to him, it's like if you've gone to the Ganga and or seen devotees take bath in the Ganga. The Ganga is pure on its own. What can you offer the Ganga? So devotees, they hold the water in their palms in a gesture of surrender, and they offer the water back because it's pure. Mother Ganga is pleased with that. It's what's more pure than the Ganga? So in the same way, Krishna's glories are the most pure, the most magnificent. What can we offer him when we pray to him? But if we offer back his glorifications to him, he's pleased by hearing that, pleased that we know that he, pleased to know that we know that about him. So in prayer, there has to be a few factors, and there has to be a sense of genuineness, that this is really coming from me. A sense of desperation. We see this in so many prayers of, you know, for example, Queen Kunti, Draupadi, even prayers for those who weren't on the platform of bhakti, like Ajamil, but there was desperation there, and Krishna responds to desperation. But here, Shukadeva Goswami shows in prayers that there must be sambandha also. There must be a sense of relationship, of knowing oneself, knowing the Supreme Lord, and knowing the relationship between the two. And once that's there, that's also a very important factor in prayer. So now, having said that and kind of understanding Shukadeva Goswami's approach, his approach to answering these questions of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit's, you know, the effect the initial answer Shukadeva Goswami had on him, and seeing this interaction between student and teacher, we can have more of an understanding of this verse and its importance. It's not just maybe what I would have thought of earlier on when I first tried to read through this chapter, sort of dry, generic, one of those verses that's just, okay, another glorification verse, and we're going to get into something more interesting. But actually, studying it, we can learn how to really pray to Krishna. And we, more than that, we can learn very specific things about the Lord. So through prayers of pure devotees, we learn about Krishna because they're so close to Krishna. You can think about the Brahma Samhita, for example. Lord Brahma was praying to Krishna, and in these prayers, we learn so many attributes of Krishna in Vrindavan specifically, so many qualities of Krishna in Vrindavan that we wouldn't know otherwise because we study these prayers of Lord Brahma. And so it's like studying the mind of a pure devotee. And if we study the mind of a pure devotee who's thinking of Krishna all the time, eventually our minds can become the same. So I just want to break down this verse just a little bit. It's the word pati is, if you've noticed, it's used quite a lot, pretty much every other verse, or every other word. And it's defined in different ways. The leader, the master, the owner, sort of the synonyms for in charge, or the lord of, the master of, the protector of, the controller of. It's defined many ways. So he's glorifying Krishna in all these ways. May the Supreme Lord, who is the protector, he's describing as the protector and glory of all the kings. He says kings like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty. I thought this was interesting because what is the role of a king? The role of a king is, you'll see that all these points, they specifically talk about how Krishna is supreme in all these important aspects of life. And if we think actually of the six opulences, what Bhagavan means is that full in these six opulences, so many of these opulences relate to this verse, and we'll kind of see that as we go along. So protecting glory of the king. The king's duty is to be glorious and protect the citizens. He's the most glorious and the greatest protector in the society. So who is the protector of the one who's the greatest protector in the material world? Who is the protector of the protector? That is Krishna. May the Supreme Lord, who is worshipable Lord of all devotees. Those who are devoted, who do they turn to? Who do they worship? Who is supreme in that regard? It's Krishna. Who is the husband of all goddess of fortune. God is the fortune, is the one with the most fortune, but who is the pati of that person? Who is the leader of all living entities? Who's the director of all sacrifices? When we make sacrifice, who's ultimately the beneficiary of it? Controller of intelligence, where does our intelligence actually come from? And it ends by saying, supreme all in all, the proprietor of all spiritual and material planets. So it's not just the supreme Lord who is great, the supreme Lord who is great in all these areas that have relevance in our lives. You know, there's the six opulences of strength, fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, renunciation. These are so attractive to us as living entities. And Krishna is full in all of these. And so it says here, he's, for example, wealth. This is an opulence. The goddess of fortune is in charge of wealth, of that department. But he is the pati of all the thousands of goddesses of fortune. That is Krishna. He's full in that opulence. Controller of intelligence. Right, knowledge is one of the opulences. Intelligence. But where does intelligence actually come from? It comes from Krishna specifically. So these six opulences are described in very specific ways in relation to Krishna. And I'll just go through a few nice points in the purport. It's saying here that everyone is seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune. But people do not know that Lord Krishna is the beloved husband of all goddesses of fortune. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord, in his transcendental abode, Goloka Vrindavan, is accustomed to herding the Surabhi cows and is served there by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. So everyone is seeking the favor of goddesses of fortune. I thought of this verse, I read it, and I thought, okay, that's not me. I'm not praying to Lakshmi Devi. Maybe this is directed to those who identify themselves as worshippers of Lakshmi, or those who are Hindu and they worship Lakshmi for material reasons. But I thought, well, there's directly seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune in that way. There's also indirectly. Have I ever wanted money? Have I ever wanted material comforts? Have I ever wanted even just nice things? If I have, then yes, I was seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune. Indirectly, I was seeking that. So this is relevant to me. This is meaningful to me. Have I ever desired something new, more expensive than what I already have? So then who is the goddess of fortune? And I was thinking about this more and researching into it. So there's a Lakshmi Devi in each universe who takes care of a specific department. The specific department of wealth. And there's one such Lakshmi in every universe, and that's an expansion of Vaikuntha Lakshmi, just like Shiva Shambhu in each universe is an expansion of Sadashiva. And if she can give so much wealth, but imagine how much wealth she has. This is really the in charge of wealth. But imagine that Lakshmi, who can give so much wealth and who possesses so much wealth, is worshipping, and the pati of that Lakshmi is Krishna. And not only that, it's saying that Krishna is the beloved husband of all goddesses of fortune. And it quotes Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sam Brahma Sevyamanam. The Lakshmi Sahasra Sata, hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis are serving with great awe and reverence and affection to Govinda. So this is Krishna. He's full in wealth. He's full in this opulence. And it says in the next, so that it talks about wealth and then it talks about sacrifice. And this is also another one that I feel like, oh, it doesn't apply to me. I'm not a yajna person. I don't do yajna sacrifices or that kind of thing for material benefit. I know Krishna is Bhaktaram Yajna Tapasam. I know he's the beneficiary of all yajna and tapa. But if you look up the dictionary definition of sacrifice, it's actually quite applicable to probably every single one of us. Sacrifice is an act of giving up something valued for the sake of something else regarded as more important or worthy. I'll say that again. It's the act of giving up something valued for the sake of something regarded as more valuable. So have you ever given up something for something presumably greater? If you have, then you've engaged in some kind of sacrifice in this material world, and this applies to you. So I just thought it was so interesting that everything that, if you look closely, and Prabhupada really describes this out in this very lengthy purport, every single one of these categories, of these opulences really of Krishna, they're things that we seek out. So if we can seek out these opulences, we seek it out naturally, but if we can see that they all come from Krishna, then naturally we will seek out the Supreme Lord, because this is natural for us to seek these things. Renunciation, wealth, knowledge, these are things we naturally want as a soul, but we forget that they're actually connected to Krishna, and he is the Pati, he is the Supreme in all of these categories. So when we read this and we understand, oh, this is why, this is the self-realized soul in Sukadeva Goswami who understands this, then we can think like him. We can develop the same loving attraction back to Krishna. So if our sacrifice, what we do, what we sacrifice in this world to gain something else isn't meant for Krishna, ultimately Srila Prabhupada says here, it'll just bind us more and more to this material world and we'll be unsatisfied. But if we know him as the supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices, then if he enjoys what we sacrifice unto him, then we also feel satisfied. And then Prabhupada says here, well, which sacrifice has he enjoyed the most? And as Sankirtan Yajna, that sacrifice is what pleases him the most. And ultimately, by pleasing him the most, that sacrifice will have the greatest benefit unto us. So, just to conclude, I felt that reading this and kind of applying this idea of reading Bhagavatam and thinking, number one, how does this apply to me, and how can I teach others, it really shifted my perspective on what I thought might have been the difficult chapters, the ones that I found previously a little bit difficult to get through. And so I thought, how does it apply to me? I realized every single verse has some application in my life. I just have to think a little bit more open-minded. And if I think, okay, how does it apply to me? And I get that answer, then it's very easy also to teach others that, because we're all in the same boat. We generally have very similar thought processes and challenges. And coming to that point, I really want to ask for your reflections on this verse, on the purport, anything I shared. And I learned this recently, I thought it was very interesting. And I also noticed in New Ramanarayatu that devotees here really like to share after Bhagavatam class. And it's such a wonderful thing, because for many of us, this may be our only sangha where we have a chance to hear, but hearing has to be accompanied by reflecting, by sharing. And if we don't get that opportunity, then there's so much in our heart that we want to talk to with others that doesn't come out. And we lose out on the opportunity to learn more ourselves by sharing and by inspiring somebody else. There is a educational neuroscientist, and he did a study, his name is Edgar Dale. And he says, 70% of what we discuss with others, we remember. Well, actually, it goes further from the beginning. He says, 10% of what we read, we remember. We remember 20% of what we hear, 30% of what we see, 50% of what we see and hear. But 70% of what we discuss with others, and it goes even further, 80% of what we personally experience, and then 90 to 95% of what we share from all the above, what we hear, see, read, discuss, experience, when we share that and teach it to others, we actually retain 90 to 95% of the information. So it's really, really important. And also, I'll just leave with this one last point. When we share, we're learning. We're learning by sharing. We're retaining so much information, but we're also gaining tremendous, tremendous blessings, because we don't know that what we share from our experience and our realization, it actually sticks with other people. And when it sticks with other people, it really inspires them. And we may not even know, but our sharing has such potency. So I just want to end there and ask for any questions or reflections. A couple here.
Thank you, Ram Govind.
I think his volume might be a little low.
I really liked your point on the, about prayer. Just like when, you know, we're raising children, when we praise them, mm-hmm. It's better than just saying, oh, you did that so nicely, or you even colored that. It was great, you know. But to be specific in what, you know, pull something out so they'll remember that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's so wonderful that you got this realization about being personal. we can't just beg from Krishna. You know, he's that person that we have, you know, that sambandha we have to really nourish, you know. And this is one way that, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you superseded again.
Thank you. I appreciate that point a lot, especially comparing it to a child. That's a a parent-child relationship. It's a very innocent and pure relationship generally. And I think when you compare aspects of our relationship with Krishna, Krishna consciousness to that, you can understand our relationship with Krishna a lot better. Please.
My comment was similar, just being grateful to remember the process of paying obeisances isn't just like to hit the deck.
Yeah.
You know, but to really think about it. And, you know, so many times devotees, they have desires, but we know that we shouldn't ask Krishna for anything material. You know, it's lower, it's low class. You know, it's like we should just depend on Krishna for everything. But at the same time, Krishna says, akama sarva kama va moksha karma dardik, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want, it's still better to go to Krishna for it. He won't give it to us unless we totally insist.
Yeah.
But generally, like a good parent, they're not going to give their child, you know, lots of milk products when they have a bad cold, even if they really want it, because that will make them sicker.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I appreciate that. When I was also at this retreat in Gitanagari Sangha Initiative, Ritajvada Maharaj did initiation to two girls who I think were born in Gitanagari, and it was a nice event. And he had asked them to offer their obeisances to Srila Prabhupada and other senior Vaishnavas and their parents. And so when the first girl went to offer obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, he said, oh, chant the pranam mantra audibly. And he mentioned something in that pastime where Srila Prabhupada had appreciated and wanted the devotees to say the pranam mantra audibly to the spiritual masters, that he could hear it. And this was pleasing to him. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, because whenever I offer obeisances to Prabhupada, I usually mutter it really quickly, or just almost how fast can I say this pranam mantra and be done. But it was like it was a personal thing. Oh, I'm offering obeisances, I'm offering respects. I want the person to see my respects, because that's the reciprocation. Yeah, so thank you for the point on obeisances. Any other questions or comments?
I was thinking, I mean, many. Very nice class. I appreciate you prepare well to share also with us. 18.64, Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna says, you should bow down to me. The most confidential four things, according to Prabhupada also. So before that sloka, sarva guya tamam bhuya sinamaya paramam bhucha. If you bow down to me, for your benefit you should bow down to me. It's not that Krishna needs our obeisances. Krishna has the unlimited devotees bowing down every day anyway. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, he says, the moment a soul bow down, his false ego disappears. And that's why Krishna says, for your benefit, te hitam. Hitam means a benefit. For your benefit, you should bow down to me. You should worship me. You should surrender to me.
Yeah.
So it's very nice. Thank you for
appreciate that. Yeah, for our own benefit, really. It's true. Krishna has all the devotees bowing down to him, offering him prayers. But really, this is for our own good. So we might as well do it correct. That's what's the point.
Another point also very interestingly, 6.8 Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma. Jnana has to become Vijnana, realized. Now you said that we should always apply, or at least what that devotee told you, that we should, how can I apply and how I can teach others. Very nice. So if we don't apply, what happened to the knowledge, acquired knowledge? So that verse also explains, you know. So Prabhupada gave a nice purport also. And I take from three purport from next two other sloka from there. There will be pride that will not satisfy me. Because purification means transformation, and transformation means satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So satisfaction will never come if I don't apply. But in order to apply, there has to be reflection. There has to be contemplation. Without contemplation, there is no reflection. Srinata Saddhaya Nittam. When your Guru Maharaj was here, I forgot when was that. Not this time. I think before COVID. Mm-hmm. He was stressing that point, Srinata Saddhaya Nittam Ghinanta Sasa Chestitam. That sloka he gave one day class, that how to hear Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. And the same topics was coming back. The three things we should do. Right. We should be attentive and do it every day, and faith, with faith. Yeah. Then you will see the effect. Yeah. So it's very powerful. But this verse, Bhagavad Gita says, if we don't apply, then it becomes like a pride within you. Oh, I know so much.
Yeah.
I can see within me it was there. I mean, it's still probably there. But it's dangerous.
Thank you for that point. Yeah, if we don't apply, it's actually...
No satisfaction.
Yeah, no satisfaction. It's a very dangerous, slippery slope that we can be on. And if we don't apply, we don't share, we don't make jnana into vijnana, it becomes pride. Thank you. Anyone else? Any other points? Any other reflections, comments, questions? Okay. Thank you, Srimad Bhagavatam. Ki jai. Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.